Any questions at this point?
Yeah, Jan, this is Janet. I have a question. If I keep seeing a pattern in other people that I'm around, is it most likely that that is a disharmony that I have that I just haven't been able to see in myself? Because I have a certain type of person that keeps showing up in my life, and it very well described when you described the person who's never happy about anything, and I don't know why these people are around me, because I don't think of myself as being that way, but I'm wondering if maybe I am.
Okay, so first thing we want to do with this is loosen it up. When people hand me something, it usually feels dense. Okay? And I like to fluff. I like to loosen this thing up and shake it a bit. Turn it upside down, kick it around a little bit, give it some space. Okay? So one of the ways I do this is what I call flipping the situation. Okay, so I'm going to flip a few times, like we've got a jar of flour where the flour has settled. I'm going to flip it up and down a few times to help loosen it up. Okay, if you have attracted people to you, and yes, the guide says we do that. If you have attracted people to you who are unhappy, it could mean that you are unhappy, and it's showing you what that looks like.
Mm-hmm.
It could also mean that you are basically happy and you can help these guys. Okay? But
history tells me that that's probably not it.
Okay. But it's good to laugh and it's good to take a different view, because you can say, nah, that's not it. Next. Okay. But what I mean by that is that if you're a happy person and these are unhappy people, why else would they be around you?
Yeah, I don't know.
They might be attracted to you.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, we have joint contracts with people, and when they are around us, they are around us for a reason. Okay, but it must also work with our spiritual task, or it wouldn't be us; they'd be around. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So what you want to look for is, where's the joint contract? So if these people are unhappy and they're coming to you, there must be something in it for you. That being around, we got to be careful here, because you're not saying that's all the people around you, and you would know the percentage and how big this problem is.
Right.
But if you are surrounded most of the time by people you like and respect and feel good with, and you have an occasional person come in that's gloom and doom, okay, then that means that there's something for you to work on, but it's not major. That's how I read it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if it was major, you'd be surrounded by doom and gloom types. You'd be gasping for air. Okay, and that would mean something different to me.
Mm-hmm.
So again, when you take what I say, take it into your life and interpret it based upon your reality. Okay. But, yes, the trick is to look for the pattern. And to do that, it's not easy. So, for instance, I'm personally very crazy about the new trend in COP programs towards the scientific rather than the emotional. Okay? Because that's who I am. And I want to know what the facts are. I don't want to hear what people feel about things until I know what the things are in the first place. And that's what daily review can do for you. It can begin to separate out the different elements of what you're describing. And when you separate out the elements, do they talk about it, or do they talk happy and energetically spew unhappiness? You know, there's a difference there. Is it on a topic?
I kind of didn't get that. I didn't get what you just said.
Well, what I'm saying is that some people, if you'd made a transcript of what they said, you wouldn't catch it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's all in the energy. It's in the way they say it, not in what they say.
Mm-hmm.
And other people will do nothing but bring you the worst news in the world. Hi, how are you? Did you hear about the axe murderer?
Yeah.
Okay. That's a different style of negativity.
Oh, right.
Than the person who says, oh, that's a wonderful new hat you have. I'm so thrilled to see it.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. So you need to figure out what it is you're talking about. You need to pare it down to the bones. And this mm-hmm. is what data review is wonderful for. These are things you might not have noticed, but once you collect this information over time, you have an almost forensic look at something that, as a totality, has been irritating you so that you didn't notice the component parts. Does that make sense?
Makes sense.
Okay. So what I'm pushing for here is that in using the daily review religiously for 2 solid weeks, you will see its value. And just like diet and exercise, I can preach all I want, but until you do it, you can sit and say, I'll never lose weight. As you can tell, I'm weight conscious right now, so I'm using this as an example. That's okay. We're all conscious of something. Okay, until you do it, until you go really realize how valuable that is.
Yeah.
So you keep it short, you keep a diary, you write down, you know, 4 or 5 things. There are different styles, there are different ways to do it. I have this beautiful daily review that the Portuguese Path, the Brazilian Path put out that is a delight and a pleasure and too big to put in one's handbag. Okay? And they have a ton of room and they spiral bound it and it's just gorgeous. But it's the same thing. They want you to write down the date, the situation, the reaction, and the judgment.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Or any 3 categories that you care for. Yes.
This is Harry.
Yes, Harry.
I think that last thought was finished, correct?
Yes, I think so.
Okay. You know that one of my favorite operative words is resistance.
Mm-hmm.
That's what led me to Pathwork. So, I think I'm getting some hints about a little bit better about what that actually means in reading about resistance with regard to self-confrontation
mm-hmm.
and resistance with regard to interaction with people in groups or just individuals.
Mm-hmm.
And the inability or the refusal to come forward in confrontational situations in a good way or even in a bad way, it seems like I have a feeling of lack of self-trust or lack of trust in the higher self and the lower self, lack of courage to address these situations, and I'm thinking that maybe the daily review might be a way to address that in increasing self-trust and attitude of courage.
Yes, your daily review might be about every time that you doubt yourself. You can do a specialist version of daily review.
Okay.
In the beginning, some people might want to do a generic version where they catch everything.
Uh-huh.
But if you're working on a particular problem, you can focus on the disharmonies that particularly refer to that topic.
Okay.
So your daily review could be all your doubts and all your waffling and all your hesitation. Come up with a list of things that are signals for you.
Uh-huh.
And every time you feel one, notice the context. Notice what was going on.
Okay.
Now, your fields may look a little differently than other people, My suggestion is that in the daily review, you want to capture a snapshot. That's all. And then at the end of the week, if you catch enough of the snapshot, it'll be enough to remember what happened.
Uh-huh.
And then at the end of the week, you can take a look at this whole thing. Now, one can go a little far in data review, okay? I knew someone who did statistical analysis on their daily review. This is not necessary.
Okay.
Okay? But if you're a scientist type, why not? If that's how you see the world, translate the world into the symbols and the language that makes sense to you. Okay?
Thanks for that suggestion.
Yeah. So the quote in PRS5 about data review that's relevant here is, even confusions should be precisely formulated so that it can be exactly pinpointed what the confusion is. Even confusions should be concisely formulated so that it can be exactly pinpointed what the confusion is. This is one of the major steps towards eliminating the confusion. So again, there's another lecture, and I'm not too sure of the number, 200 and something, I don't remember which one, 211 perhaps, that is the nickname for it is Ego Tricks. Okay? And that lecture talks about all the ways your ego tries to get its own way. All the arguments and all the ways that it tries to convince you to do things its way. And here what we're talking about, the ego being the part of you that thinks it's I. So when you say, I want, for a lot of us, that's simply our ego. That's our mask, our presentation, our idealized image. It's not our deep spiritual self very often. Our deep spiritual self may not have an opinion about what ice cream we want. A lot of the daily decisions we make are made by the equivalent of middle management and bureaucratic parts of us, just like our breathing and our hearts and our lungs are not taken care of by the front of our brains, taken care of by the back of our brains, or they're on independent systems. And they only get thought about when they need attention. The ego is like that. It is designed to take care of you and to do the normal things. The ego will drive the car while you zone out. Okay? And so when the ego feels threatened or is uncomfortable with some of the challenges that you put to it, one of its tricks is to go into confusion. Another trick is to go into self-doubt. And if that does the trick, they're done. So when you say, I'm confused, and therefore there's nothing I can do, the guide is saying, yes, there is. You notice what you can about this particular moment of confusion. And my experience and the experience of people I have worked with is that if you start, just like diet and exercise, if you start, things will change. Confusion does not stand up to scrutiny. It changes, it shifts, it metamorphoses. And what that means to me is, it wasn't confusion. It was resistance. Try it. If you're interested in what your confusions are about, keep a daily review about the moments you are confused in a given day.
I bought another little spiral notebook today. This one I'm going to use.
Okay. So is that pretty much, I'm looking at the last sentence, says it's very important to understand that the path follows a spiral movement, but that's a terrible pun and I won't go there. Are there any other questions about daily review right now?
Okay, Jen.
Yes.
Because I do daily review, and I've found it very valuable, certainly in terms of seeing, if nothing else, the frequency of these patterns that I have running in my life. And I guess where I'm at now, because I'm kind of going through the pathwork and reading each one lecture a week, and it's going to take me 5 years to probably get through the whole lot, but is to start, I guess, the next stage. It's like I recognize the patterns, I know the trigger points, and it's like when they happen in real life now, I think they maybe go a bit slower because I'm going, okay, I'm back here again, and it's not quite so much of a knee-jerk, but I still don't have, well, the technology or the access to the methods to dissolve, you know, the pattern. It seems like, okay, well, I know I've got the pattern. I know when I have an authority figure that basically doesn't see me, then I basically get angry, and, you know, so I try new things sometimes in terms of making sure my needs are out there, that sort of thing. But it just feels like there's another piece that is that belongs to the process that I haven't quite gotten to yet. So can you maybe speak something about that?
Okay. What we're talking about here is we're talking about attitude and resistance. Once you move through the resistance and you have a positive attitude, it's like you sweep away the fog, okay? And now you're looking at the actual bits and pieces of who you are. It sounds to me as if you're ready to go into deeper work with yourself. It sounds, authority is a great place to work. Everybody has problems with authority. Pathwork in particular, by the way, we preach independence and freedom of the soul, and then we have a hard time making agreements together. Okay, it is a conflict in the real world. Authority is a real problem because authority is held by imperfect human beings. Okay, but the fact that they are imperfect is not the problem. That's the gift. Just like you learn to stand on the planet, you need to learn to work with the imperfection of human nature as manifested in something like authority. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
The things you love to do don't seem like work, do they?
That's true.
So we don't like knuckling under to authority. Most of us do not derive pleasure from this. Okay? But once you do, once you change your attitude, it changes everything. So I'm going to digress for a second to give you an example.
Mm-hmm.
The guide talks about law upholders and law breakers in lecture number 52, The God Image. Okay? And also in the lecture on authority, number 46. I know some of these numbers, not all of them. The ones that get repeated a lot. So he talks about the law upholders and the law breakers. And he says there's not really that much difference between the two sides. My personal experience is that I was a law breaker in attitude for most of my life. And then I found pathwork. And I did a lot of work on myself. And at some point, now I don't know what the day was, wasn't that dramatic, I noticed that I had become a law upholder. I switched teams. I found that interesting. I was being pointed at and accused of liking rules, of making them, of enforcing them, of being one of them instead of one of us by my community. And I wondered, how did that happen? And my conclusion, which I thought if I shared it might be of value, my conclusion was the only reason I wanted to break the rules is they weren't fair. And I had become aware that I could become part of a group that made the rules and I could make them more fair. And there have to be rules, I know that, but if they're fair, then it's better for both sides. They're easy to enforce, and they're easier to live by. But before that, I was a lawbreaker. We all have attitudes towards authority, and they may change in our lifetime. If authority is one of your issues that shows up in your daily review, that's the time to start inspiraling, which is why Carrie's comment amused me. It's called inspiraling, okay? And go deeper on that one topic. Pull out every single lecture on authority And recognize that this is going to lead you back to your parents.
Yeah, because no,
they were your first model. And what the guide teaches, psychology also teaches, and zoology, you can find the same thing in zoology. So in zoology, ducks are imprinted by the first moving thing they see. And that becomes mom. And that's cute and adorable and makes for lovely childhood stories. Okay? We are little better than ducks on some levels of our being. And we imprint authority before we learn to talk and think. And we imprint them from the models that we see in our lives. They may be mom and dad, they may be grandma and grandpa, they may be foster parents, it doesn't matter who they are, human beings are going to imprint authority. They're going to imprint what caretaking looks like. And they're going to fight to get what they need. To fight to get what you need, you have to recognize where you're not getting it, who's not giving it to you, and who can give it to you. And on a primeval, primitive level, we all do this. So it sounds like your job is to start going, tunneling straight down into your own psyche and uncovering how you've been influenced by authority during your life. And when you do that, there's an unwinding, there's a disentanglement that occurs. And it takes a little bit of time. I think that's what I'm describing when I describe my lawbreaker, law upholder thing. That comes from my childhood. And so when it unwound, I didn't notice it in particular. I just eventually wound up with a different attitude. So this is, you're not going to wake up one morning and not have a problem with authority. But you
and
can.
And there seems to be a correlation between authority, law holder, and lawbreaker, and collusion.
Okay, let me hold that thought for a second. Yes, there is. Okay, that's a good segue for me. Thank you. So when you go down into your own personal life and you find these things and you realize what they are, what you're bringing is awareness. You're bringing a flashlight, a torch, into areas of your life that have probably never been examined clearly before. And with the light and the consciousness is going to come some realizations. The realizations alone are going to take care of some things. You're going to get a whole bunch of ahas when you do this kind of exploration. So that's what it sounds like to me. You've done all the general work. Now it's time to go tunneling. And since authority seems to be an issue, and you got to start someplace, you might as well start there.
Well, I've been doing it for a while.
Okay.
I take your point, though. It's an organic thing, and it just needs to take its time. But I guess being of reason type, it's interesting for me to feel like I've got some kind of framework in terms of understanding, well, mm-hmm. if I keep doing this process a certain way, then that will, and then I'll have little signs, okay, I'm progressing here or not progressing there. But I just don't think it's a linear process, and I think my mind wants it to be linear.
It isn't a linear process. But it is, consciousness requires all the talents you have developed. Okay? All your ability to think and perceive, your ability to think in terms of four or five things happening at the same time, which to some people could look like chaos, and to you may not, okay, is of enormous benefit in going into this territory. Understand that you did not have these tools and abilities when you were 3 years old. And that things that happened to you when you were three may have been the impetus for you to develop in the way you developed. Reaching out for structure and order, precisely so at some point in your life you could do this work. And go back into the muck of emotion and figure out what's going on. Now understand when you go into the actual confrontation with people, it's very complicated. So I'm going to refer back to what I talked about reason, will, and emotion 2 weeks ago. I'm a reason, will type, So the minute I figure out that the person I'm going to argue with is an emotion type, my warning signs go up. Because I know we're going to have to be very careful. Because they're going to feel a certain way, and they're going to interpret based on feelings, and I'm going to be listening to words. And we could miscommunicate if we're doing that. Okay? Same thing with your own analysis of your own life. You may have made decisions when you were a child based on strong feelings that you have put away as an adult, and so you don't access them easily. So the child's experience seems illogical and irrational, but it wasn't. And this is a place where you need to love that kid. You need to love and respect that kid for surviving. So what I tell my clients is, I don't care what you did, you're sitting here talking to me, I forgive you for everything, let's go forward. Because we are all carrying the sense that we could have, should have done a better job. So when you go back to this child, you are going to need to understand it based on what it was thinking and feeling at the time, and its perceptions, which you no longer have because you see a larger world. But that kid didn't. So when these attitudes on authority were formed way back in our childhood, we were not in conscious control of those attitudes. So by finding the remnants of it, which it sounds like you're finding these remnants of rebellion, and tracking it back to why rebellion was a good solution at the time, all things considered. That's how you take, can you feel how that can take apart an attitude? Instead of making it bad, you simply acknowledge, yes, when I was in a dangerous situation, I had to behave in this way. I'm not in that situation, and I'm going to consciously work on changing my behavior, reinforcing it with cognitive work. You are not in the wrong place, Tom. Pathwork is hard cognitive work. I mean, reading one of these sentences takes a college education. Okay?
No, it's my life path. This is what I'm here to face. I accept that.
Yes.
So I appreciate your feedback. That's given me some good insights.
Okay. So Harry is interested in the connection to collusion, and that's where I'd like to go next. Is there any other questions right now? Okay. So, collusion. So here's the question, and I'm going to read it because it's the only place in the lectures on a quadrillion pages where the word collusion occurs. Are you willing to forswear all kinds of collusion, active as well as passive, by commission or omission, against peers or authority figures? Are you willing to muster the courage to confront the other person if the collusion comes from them and propose to go together to the third person who may possibly be maligned or gossiped about to question with an open mind what the truth is? This means giving up a momentary gratification and relief, a negative pleasure, and this would be your sacrifice for God, for the larger cause of which you have become a part. Now, that is a huge question. And it is right for people to pause on it, because it's pulling the rug out from an awful lot of normal social interactive behavior. All of us collude. And the reason I'm bringing this up in the same discussion with constructive attitudes and self-confrontation is collusion is a way of bleeding away our energies and not letting something come forward that needs to come forward. Collusion is a way of covering something up. And in collusion, we get help. So I spent the rest of the page on the materials I sent out, I spent the rest of the page coming up with, I didn't mean for it to be cute, but sometimes it's nice to be lighthearted and sometimes it's nice to be heavy, okay? Coming up with different areas and different types of collusion to kind of give you an all-around picture. So I started with the dictionary definition, and I had to look at different dictionaries because collusion is technically a legal problem. So the first definition in most dictionaries is the legal thing because people get prosecuted for collusion. That's how serious collusion is. Okay, it's like robbery.
Yeah.
So in the definitions, what I found that was a more common usage is organizations or individuals acting in concert against the interests of a third party. Secret agreement or cooperation, especially for a fraudulent, illegal, or deceitful purpose. Now, throw away illegal because we're looking at paths where people don't normally get arrested. Okay? So we're looking at a level of functioning in society where we don't normally get picked up. Okay? We're looking at common everyday events where we don't realize that we are colluding or allowing collusion by others. And a lot of the things that wind up having to be confronted involve collusion. Because if you are colluding with someone against someone else and they argue with you, human nature tends to say, no, we both agree, it's true. See, I have a witness. My buddy here and I both agree that you're ugly. Okay? Doesn't it make your judgment feel safer and stronger if everybody in the room is nodding their head?
Yeah, she's ugly. We all say she's ugly.
Then it's not an arguing. It's just, you're ugly. You're short and you're ugly. Wow, what's your problem? It's just a fact. And that's the joke version. And the non-joke versions are very, very unfunny. So in sports, the example I found I was really fascinated by, and you go on the Internet nowadays and you eat up 3 days. And I couldn't believe how much stuff there was. It was a delight and a pleasure to choose from. But the best example I found in the sports world was in chess, where at some point the Soviets were accused of infusing chess with strategy, whereby some of their players would create draws or ties so that another player could advance. And their joint goal was to get one of their people into the finals, and they didn't care which one. Now, that sounds altruistic on some level. And in some sports, that's fair, but not in chess. So it became a big deal when they figured out what these guys were doing. And you can imagine the Soviet response. Because they have a vested interest. They have a great deal of national pride in their chess champions. And they may not see that line they cross, because it's so important for them to hold on to international mastery of chess. Now, there are other things in sports. The anabolic steroid thing in sports is one example of collusion. People knew about it before it became news. But who's going to blow the whistle on an entire sport? So there was collusion in the fact that some people knew, some people suspected, some people wondered and didn't pursue it. Some people knew and didn't work very hard on trying to help other people find out how to test for it and didn't ask them to do so. Because if you examine him, you will also examine me. So any action that you do that prevents another person from being investigated because you would also be at risk, that is actually collusion. You are colluding against the, let's just call it, authority figure. You're colluding against an authority figure to save your own hide, but it's not at risk yet, the other guy is. But if they get him, they'll get you later. And so in collusion, we will stand behind people, not because we believe in them, but because we're actually standing up for our own self-interest.
So, Jan?
Yeah.
And I won't remember the lecture, and I'm not going to get it exactly right, but I know that there's a point where the guy talks about how, you know, when we go into our defenses, you know, we start building cases against other people. So as
mm-hmm.
you're talking about, this is what I'm getting is the,
yeah.
you know, it's like we're being triggered, and rather than looking at what we're being triggered by, we go into defense, we start building this case, and collusion is about when we bring in those other people to tell our story to it. Oh, they were so horrible to me, and blah, 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 and that's the collusion there, and it's engaging in collusion helps you to keep your defenses rather than looking at the truth.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Jen? I don't remember the lecture either. I wish I did. It's kind of cute sometimes. But, yeah. Go ahead, please.
Oh, this is Melita.
Hi, Melita.
I've been keeping quiet because I wasn't certain if I'm doing this correctly here.
That's all right, go ahead.
This is just so apt for my situation. Every single day at work, people literally come up to me, not necessarily myself, but to anyone, and trying to get me on their side as far as other work people are concerned. And it is just an awful place to work at. And I don't understand why I'm not being placed in this situation because I chose this particular job. But it's just an amazing place to be at because from every corner there's about 12 people, there's two men, but 10 women, and it's a constant everyday occurrence where people are talking behind everybody else's back. And I've been to a point where I felt that I wanted to say something.
Mm-hmm.
And flipping to another point where I thought, well, it's just ridiculous. I don't want to get involved.
Okay. It's a great point to make.
Pardon?
That's a tremendous example of collusion.
I don't understand why I put myself into this position.
Okay. Let's play with it for a second. Let's just play with it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
What's the positive of being surrounded by a particular event, a particular experience? What's the positive?
Well, for me, the most apparent thing was that I actually noticed it. Whereas before, I've been in situations where I actually jumped in on the bandwagon and went along. And this time around, I'm thinking, wow, this is so apparent.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's no running away from it. So that's a positive for me.
Yes.
But now that I know that, I'm thinking, well, okay, I can still jump on the bandwagon, and sometimes it is so difficult not to. It's really, and sometimes it's so, what's the word? Oh, it's like you don't even notice that you're on it sometimes.
So what would be the positive in the future? What is it possible that you could learn here that any place else you could escape learning? You've got the one part. You've got the noticing. Let me make a suggestion rather than, mm-hmm. I don't mean to make you guess.
Mm-hmm.
What occurs to me is I began to hear you talk about getting on the bandwagon. Were you referring to getting on their bandwagon or becoming in protest of this?
No, actually they are, they're saying things, they're trying to enlist your help so that you also go along with what they're saying against somebody else.
Okay. Let me take off from here because I think I can answer your question.
Mm-hmm.
It is very, very difficult to be the only voice to speak up.
Yeah.
It is a shattering experience. If you have a community of people who like to play games and you do not, you can try to hide for a long time. And there may come a time where you simply find yourself in a position where the only honest thing to do is say, I don't want to play, thank you. Now, that statement, depending on the situation, is going to cost you.
Well, this is the scary part.
Yeah, that's what I was hearing. Okay. Mm-hmm. So this whole lecture on confrontation, it does not say to do this by standing on a table in the lunchroom. It does not mean go find the public address system and blast it all over the company. Okay? Mm-hmm. You don't have to do that. The truth is that the power of one whistleblower simply saying quietly and politely, "Thank you for sharing, I don't wish to play," is not only shattering for you, it's shattering for them. You don't have to be loud about this, and you don't have to necessarily do anything dramatic. They may have never heard anybody say those words out loud. And that alone could begin change, because I will bet you, Melita, that you're not the only one. The thing about collusion is you're going to get a lot of people going along who don't agree but who do not have the character and resolve and ego strength and self-will to be different. And this is what sometimes leadership is all about. And the reason this question about collusion is in stage two is stage two is the minimum level from which Pathwork picks its leaders. If you can't say that statement, we have no use for you in leadership. Because leadership is all about that. Leadership is standing up and saying, "I don't agree," when everybody else not only wants to agree, they want to go to lunch, and they want to go now. And they want to do something else this afternoon.
Yes, I've noticed actually myself that I've tried to get away from the not direct confrontation as such,
mm-hmm.
but I've tried various methods of getting away from all that chattering.
well, what I'm suggesting
myself going away, pardon?
What I'm going to suggest is this. You have tried many methods. I'm presuming that you're concluding that they didn't work, okay?
Obviously, yes.
You got to try something different. That's the definition of something
mm-hmm.
else.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So, if you've tried a lot of things, I would advise that you sit down and list what you've done. And ask yourself, did you really do them or did you try to do them? And by that I mean that we can say, "I tried to stop it." But that sentence is too vague. That sentence doesn't mean anything. You need to recall what the situation was and what you actually did. Now, again, like I've said before in this conversation, I am not pretending to assume I know what happens in your life. So just take this as a generic statement, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We can protest so weakly that conveniently nobody hears us, and yet we actually said the words. And then later we can say, "I did protest and nobody listened." But protest that doesn't actually get lodged, protest that doesn't get heard, protest that isn't thought out and clear, isn't effective. And we can sometimes try to have our cake and eat it too by protesting in a way that is ineffective. And then we can say, "I protested," but we don't have to take the hit for having made other people angry because they actually heard our protest. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So you need to look at what you've actually done in great detail. And I tell you right now that whatever it was, you need to ramp it up. Okay? Diet and exercise.
Yeah, I need to.
If it didn't work, you need to do more. You need to do it with more force and more strength and more thought and consideration. And what the guide is saying is to look in our own hearts first. So you need to look at whether you're really trying hard or you want to try hard and you're actually scared, which is very human.
Mm. No, I think that's where I'm at. That's where I'm at. I'm really scared to say something. I'm scared that I'm going to be too direct and it'll be too much of a blow for everyone.
Right.
For me.
So one of the things you may want to work on is figuring out how to start off softly and gently. There is no harm in starting softly and gently, and it will give you practice. So again, standing on a table with a placard in your hand is not soft and gentle. Okay? And if you haven't worked up to that, then you're not going to know how to hold that stance. You're going to be embarrassed and ashamed and back off very quickly. So you're going to need to know how to, you're going to need to take baby steps. You're going to need to rehearse your protest. So I'll give you another example, a slight digression that may help. I am a very shy person. I don't know how to say boo to strangers. I hate strangers. I dread a room full of strangers. So when I have to go someplace where there are strangers, I rehearse social phrases. Everybody may now laugh, but that's how inept I am. But I don't look inept because I do some homework, and I practice social phrases. And if I muck up at the social event, I come home and do my daily review and say, okay, what'd you do, girl? Where'd you stumble? What do you need to do to make that event more pleasurable so that you're more at ease and you can just relax and be with other people? Same thing goes for going in with an agenda in your hand. You need to rehearse. Rehearse not to make yourself more powerful and effective, but so you really know what you want to say. And the words are familiar to you. And they are your words and not words that somebody else gave you. So that when you're prompted, you may squeak instead of shout, but you will have something ready to say. That make sense?
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. Now, Harry, you'd asked a question before about how collusion and confrontation and all this folds in. And in all honesty, I didn't write it down word for word, so I'm not totally sure what your question is at this point. It may have changed. Would you like to repeat it?
One last question I wanted with regard to that was, in your example of collusion and circumventing outdated laws, it seems to me that that might be an example of justifiable collusion.
Okay, I'll go there. Two of the examples that I found on the internet, I went into sports, I went into discrimination, domestic violence, online gambling, circumventing outdated laws, and politics and business. Okay? Circumventing outdated laws, the best example I found, and I always try to find black and white examples because they're easier. Okay? In a group of people that I don't know, I need to stay generic but specific at the same time. They used to make comedies in the 30s and 40s about the laws, particularly in New York, where you couldn't get a divorce unless one of you had committed adultery. And so the comedies were about faking getting caught with a lover so that the other partner could then lodge a divorce and you could both get divorced. And the coin toss was, one of us is going to look bad, who's it going to be? And depending on the circumstances, sometimes it was the man and sometimes it was the woman. But it could ruin a woman's reputation and perhaps not a man, back and forth like that. That's an example of collusion. And the phrase I used was collusion practiced by couples before no-fault divorce in order to make up a grounds for divorce. Okay, by fabricating a permitted reason, the colluding couples hope to trick a judge into granting their freedom from a marriage. Okay? That's an example of positive collusion. we're not going to necessarily break the law, but we're going to run a truck through this loophole. Okay?
Right. My particular situation was the statement was cruel and abusive treatment in order to get a divorce, even though it wasn't true.
But that's not usually what happens. Okay? And I'll tell you why. Because in a state where you could file for abuse, you could file for it without having the evidence of a bruise on you.
Right.
Okay? So that's slightly fabricated, and that doesn't fit the actual laws that people were trying to circumvent. So that's why we need to not invent things. We need to stay in reality. The reality was that there were laws that said there were no grounds for divorce except adultery. None. Therefore, you had to fake adultery. And they faked it. They didn't necessarily even have lovers. They would fake the arrangement, get a photographer to take a photograph or a witness to make an observation, and they'd take that to court. Okay? It's not collusion when you're trying to hurt somebody and get away with it, necessarily. But my example in domestic violence, I found some interesting phrases when I looked that up. Collusion is any act that discounts, condones, or ignores any of the tactics that aggressors use to maintain unfair or illicit power and control over another. And I think that fits your example. Where collusion comes in abuse, is, and we are moving away from that. I know that there are always current examples, but as a general thing, society is now saying it's wrong to beat your spouse. But 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, there was collusion in society, among males in particular, so that power could be maintained. And they looked the other way. That was collusion. If you had control over your spouse, you could get them to do what you wanted. And not only was domestic violence a problem, women, for centuries, were not able to own property. That is also a form of collusion. If she can't own property, she can't leave. And when males agree to something, to a situation that harms the independence and freedom and growth of females, that is collusion. And it works in reverse, and women collude. So that was certainly not meant to be a sexist, to me there's not any sexism in that. That's simply how society grew up. And women sitting in the kitchen complaining about their husbands, because that's what we do when we sit in the kitchen, can encourage the same kind of collusion that Melita was talking about in her workplace, where people want to join in and complain, even if they may not feel like complaining. Because if you don't complain, people are going to notice. So just because everybody is complaining does not mean they individually want to. The collusion happens when they decide they don't want to be left out. And that's a place of self-interest that we justify. Does that answer your question, Terry?
Yeah, that's good, huh?
Okay. So we're done. According to my clock. Wow.
Thanks a lot, Jen. Thanks a lot, everyone, for their sharing. It was much appreciated.
Yeah. So I have learned how to get the recording up on the website. It took me a couple of tries and a couple of programs, but the last teleconference is up. The link is valid. And I should have this recording up on the website by tomorrow or within 12 hours, 24 hours or so. And the handouts are available on the website. And the next topic is going to be Lecture 249, The Pain of Injustice. And I'm including some room for discussion of spiritual law, which is 171 in that.
Jen?
Yes.
When
where do I click on the website to get the I know that there's the whole thing, but do you have a particular bit where the bit that you prepare for these conferences?
Last time I did, who's this speaking?
Selena.
Thank you, Lena. I'm sorry, there's a lot of voices and I get confused. I will send you my notes from last time. Okay? Mm-hmm. I did not send them to everybody because I tend to overwhelm people with the amount of paperwork I send. Okay?
Yeah.
This time I was working directly from the handouts that are on the website. Okay?
I did download the one that you attached, but when you tell us that we can go to the Texas website,
mm-hmm.
Do we have a particular bit to click to get all this material?
Well, I've tried to make it quite clear. I may not have done a good job. Let me review that tonight. In all honesty, this has been a technological nightmare for me. So I can well understand that I thought I did something and then I turned around and undid it because I had to redo many, many things. So let me double check and make sure that this information is available, but I will still email it to you.
Thank you, Jen. It's available on the website. Well, most of it was the three-pager on, I think it was the collusion. That only came through the email. That wasn't on the website, but the longer documents were.
Okay, I think that's what I did was when I sent out one piece when I sent out the announcement for this workshop.
And the
I
other
didn't
pieces.
Mount that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, so when I printed things out, I have like 20 worksheets on the floor in front of me, and it was I can understand your confusion. I've got some myself, and I apologize for that. Yeah. So I'll clean that up, and I'll send this out. Any other questions before we go? Okay. It's been lovely. I've enjoyed it.
Thanks, Jen.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks, all of you.
Thanks, everyone. And
thanks everyone.
Okay, thank you, Jen.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Jan.
You're welcome, love.
It's Areli.
Hello, Areli. Welcome.
Yeah, I joined like 10 minutes late, so that's why I didn't say hi, but I want to say thank you.
That's okay, Areli. You're most welcome.
Okay.
Thanks to everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.